Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're all aware of the price we're forced to pay for gasoline these days, but what is your budget for drinking water? Although most Americans have round-the-clock access to tap water that meets or exceeds federal standards, we drank almost 25 gallons of bottled water per capita in 2006 alone. As journalist Elizabeth Reut discovered, U.S. consumers often cite taste preferences or health concerns as reason for paying hundreds of times more per serving for water in a bottle. But they may also be responding to massive marketing efforts that have successfully transformed a basic human need into a luxury commodity. She writes about the phenomenon and about the growing backlash against it in her new book, Bottle Mania: How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. Elizabeth, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
You hadn't really drunk very much bottled water at all before you started this project. Can you talk off the top about the perspective you had going in?
Well, it's true. I had never bought water in this country. When I've traveled overseas, I had bought it. So going into it, I just had this feeling that it was superfluous and somehow egregious and silly, like a lot of people, I guess. And I thought that it was a simple matter, that bottled water was bad and tap water was good. But as I learned more about each, my feeling started to change, and it was sort of a lot more complex than I thought it was, looking at both kinds of water.
How many actual bottles a year are we using once in this country and then tossing away?
It's about the equivalent of 50 billion bottles of water, 50 billion. And when you say tossing away, there's different kinds of tossing. There's the 14% that go back into recycling systems, and then there's all the rest that go to landfills and incinerators, and it's something like 30 or 40 million bottles a day that are wasted, that are not recycled.
Is there any reason, we should clear this up, why bottles can't be refilled and used multiple times? Are they somehow just magnets for germs if we've used a bottle once?
The bottles with narrow necks are a little bit hard to keep clean day after day after day. Some people, and I've seen this on the internet, and they're mostly young men, take pride in hanging onto a bottle for years at a time. And then usually it's women who write in and tell them how gross that is. But when the bottles have wider mouths, of course, it's easier to get a brush in there and to scrub it. And the concern is bacteria that's coming from your lips. But I think people are all too freaked out about bacteria, and if your bottle starts to smell, then yes, you're going to want to wash it. But there are great reusable bottles out there that we can use for our tap water. But if you're going to keep your little bottle clean, the one with the narrow neck, you know, more power to you.
What are the most common sources of tap water in the United States? Most of it comes from groundwater and from rivers?
There's two kinds of water, groundwater, which comes from underground, and surface water. Slightly more than half of the population drinks from groundwater. It's pumped up through wells and stored. Surface water is collected from rivers and lakes and reservoirs.
And what does it take to get it actually clean enough to drink?
It depends where you live and what's in there. Where I live in New York, our water is collected. It falls as rain or snow in the Catskill Mountains. And it's collected in reservoirs and sent by aqueducts 100 miles to the city. And it's so clean, or relatively clean, that we're not required to filter it. So the city just puts in fluoride and chlorine and something called orthophosphate, which coats the pipes so that metals and minerals don't leach out of the pipes into the water, because water is a universal solvent and it picks up traces of whatever it goes through. So almost all municipal water supplies across the country do those basic things. But other cities that have more stuff going on in their watershed, more agriculture and more industry, have to do more filtering and coagulating and flocculating and things like that to get these particles and contaminants out.
Yeah, and what are the things that people are most concerned about? I know lately we've heard a lot about drug remnants that actually find their way back into the water supply.
Right. Pharmaceuticals, yeah. That, I hate to say it, is like the least of our concerns. It's worrisome but not alarming, environmentalists say. I think of more concern are industrial contaminants like perchlorate or perfluorochemicals and these byproducts of manufacturing that end up in the water that should have been contained or kept out. So there are the industrial contaminants, and then there's agricultural stuff. There's nitrogen and phosphorus running off into rivers. And that the problem with that is that it spurs the growth of algae, and when the algae die, they're consumed by bacteria, and the bacteria use up all the oxygen in the water, so you get dead zones. But then you have all this dead bacteria in there, and when the utility adds chlorine, the chlorine mixes with the organic material that's in there, and it can develop disinfection byproducts, which are some of them are linked with cancer. So that's another concern, and it starts with all this organic material. Then we try to clean up the water, and sometimes if you don't get the balance right, you end up with DBPs, they call them, disinfection byproducts.
And those are one of those things that caused you to think maybe bottled water is not such a bad thing.
Yeah, and so I learned a lot about my tap water, which I had been told was pretty good, and I really liked the way it tastes, and it kept nagging at me, and I thought, you know, oh, I'm just going to find out why. I'm not just going to, you know, take the bottled water's industry's word for it that their product is purer and better. Let me really find out. And so I had some tests done on my water, and it cost me about $140, maybe a little more. And it was very reassuring because I found out that the disinfection byproducts are way below the federal standard. And I had a whole list of ND stands for non-detect on all the things they tested for. So I was relieved, and I'm very happy to keep drinking my tap water, as can hundreds of millions of people across the country.
Elizabeth Royt is my guest. Her new book is called Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. One thing that people talk about when they choose to drink bottled water is the taste. And you mentioned that you like the taste of your tap water. You actually sat down with a taste expert for water. What did you learn about what we should be... It's almost like... It almost came across like a wine tasting.
That's exactly what it was like. I brought these stemmed glasses to a park, and I brought my linen napkins because I wanted it to be a kind of zero-waste affair. I felt bad enough buying these bottles that were going to end up, well, I, of course, would recycle them, but I felt funny buying them all. So I brought him lunch, and we met in Bryant Park in New York, which has an important place in New York's water history because it used to be the site of a receiving reservoir when the city first collected water from Westchester County and brought it down. But anyway, it was sort of formal, and I had nine bottles of water, and I expected him to taste each and be descriptive and be qualitative, and he was really reluctant to give me a whole stream of adjectives, and I was looking forward to that flowery talk, but he doesn't like to use it, he says, because, he would talk about bubbles, which was, you know, that's easy. And he would talk about mineral content, but I could read that on the label. I knew what was in there. But he says that it's a sort of set and setting thing, and it's the same with wine, that you can taste something once, and then you can taste it a week later and have a completely different opinion of it. So that's why he was hesitant to attach adjectives to the different waters.
And one of the things you talked to him about was the evenness of the bubble spacing.
That was one of the first things we drank, and he said... I said, so we each were drinking the same water at the same time, and I said, so what do you think of this? And he said, I guess it was the Proustino. And he said, notice the evenness of the bubbles. And I said, what do you mean? Like, they're the same distance, they're apart, and does someone actually measure this? And he sort of laughed at me and shook his head and said, no, but I guess that is one of the criteria, is how the bubbles are distributed in the water.
And one thing that you also discovered was that when there are blind taste tests with people who are not experts, very often they choose what is coming out of the sink in their kitchen as opposed to what they might pay $4 a bottle for.
Right. And when people conduct those blind taste tests, they're comparing apples with apples in that they're drinking still water and they're drinking not mineral water. And people, yeah, 4 out of 5 times they say people pick the tap. They can't tell the difference, I'm sorry, between tap water and bottled, and they prefer the taste of tap. I think a lot of that is, it's like mother's milk or something. It's where you grew up. And I know people who grew up in New York and love New York water, but then people move here and then they say they don't like it. And the same with Chicago or L.A. I've talked to lots of people who hate L.A. water, but at the same time, it wins taste tests across the country. So it's individual, and I think it's more likely that the water you grew up with is what you like.
So let's talk about the sources of bottled water. We talked about where tap water comes from. You can get bottled water that's simply purified, or you can get something that actually comes from a spring.
Right. The number 1 and 2 selling waters, Aquafina and Dasani, are made from municipal tap water. It comes from the same sources as what the city is drinking, and they're in cities across the country. And then they run the water through multi-step filtering processes, microfiltration and reverse osmosis. They expose the water to ultraviolet light. They do all this stuff, and then they bottle it. Although Dasani, after taking everything out, puts in what they call a mineral packet, with sodium in it, salt, and calcium and magnesium to give the water some body. Aquafina just strips everything out and bottles it, and, you know, some people like that, some people don't. So those are the purified waters. If the label says purified water, it's been through all that kind of thing. The other kind of water that's really popular is spring water, and that's the Poland Spring, the Arrowhead. And if you combine all these spring water brands owned by Nestle, and there's 7 or 8 or 9 of them across the country, they outsell those top two waters. And they come from, if not exactly the spring itself, then near it. There's an exception that the FDA gives spring water bottlers that they can collect the water near the spring from a borehole, an actual well. So it is coming from a well, but there's a hydrologic connection between the well and the spring, and they've also proved that the water is chemically similar.
So it's the same basic water. They're just getting it in a more efficient way? Is that?
Yeah, they think it's more sanitary, and I think it allows them to pump a lot more water than just waiting for the water to bubble up at the spring and catch it in a bottle. Although some spring water bottlers do that, and they're much smaller companies, and many of them are angry at the big spring water bottlers, at Nestle, I'll just come out and say it, for collecting water not from a spring, and they think that they're mislabeling the product, calling it spring water.
Is this any good for the little towns that have these, and I guess they're not always little, that have these springs in them?
Well, they really are little because the companies want to collect water from a clean and protected source, and you're not going to find a pristine spring in the middle of an urban center. So they are rural areas. They're at the stream's headwaters, and they are usually surrounded by protected forest land, which helps keep the watershed clean. And yes, it can be a good thing if the town wants to have someone collecting their water and trucking it away or have a bottling plant. And I think it can be good for a town because the company brings some benefit. But there have been communities that are really opposed to it, and they don't want their water taken. They worry about the effect on the aquifer and the surrounding wetlands and the ecosystem that used to be fed by those millions of gallons of water. If they're not worried about the environment, they might be complaining about truck traffic, and that's happening in towns in Maine and in other places. These are big tanker trucks. They hold 8,000 gallons of water, and other people don't want a bottling plant and all the other traffic that you get when you have an industrial facility in a small town. So it can be controversial.
In terms of energy, what does it take to produce, which is a funny word, produce a bottle of water and get it to the consumer?
It takes oil. It takes about 17 million barrels of oil to make the bottles that are used in the United States each year, and making that generates about 2.5 million tons of CO2 pollution. It takes even more oil to transport the water to the plant and then out of the plant in the little bottles and to chill the bottles and then to collect and dispose of them, whether they're going to a recycling plant or a dump or an incinerator. So there's one group that did some work and figured out that if you add up all the oil used to produce the water and move it around and get rid of it, it's going to equal 1/4 of the bottle full of oil.
Wow.
It's quite an image.
Yeah, it's scary. And obviously the cost, there must be some cost of getting tap water, but it's negligible in terms of energy?
In New York, again, because I live here, 90% of the system runs on gravity. But no, and other cities aren't as lucky to have these mountains, their water coming from that sort of source. So yes, it takes energy to pump the water and to move it around, but it's really, I guess, it's minuscule compared to the bottled water.
Elizabeth Broit is my guest. Her new book is called Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join us, is 1-800-933-5372, or we'd love to hear from you via email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, imagination and curiosity, sharp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Elizabeth Reut. Her new book is called Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. If you'd like to join us this afternoon, the telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Our email address is think@kera.org. So, Elizabeth, I guess this all started with Orson Welles convincing people to try Perrier in the 70s.
Right. It was 1977 when Perrier came across the ocean, and Orson Welles sort of purred over the TV. What is it? There is a spring, and its name is Perrier. And it was the first time that American consumers got a taste of the stuff. I mean, we'd had a bottled water industry here for a couple hundred years, and it was small regional companies, and people had water delivered to offices. But this was the little green glass bottle, and it was filled with bubbly stuff, and it was fancy, and there was snob appeal to it, and the marketing campaigns were really clever. They used celebrities, and they also linked their product with wellness and health. Perrier sponsored the New York Marathon, so people thought that it was something that healthy people drank.
Well, what's so interesting about that is you can imagine the Perrier phenomenon, because we were used to drinking, you know, sodas and carbonated beverages. That it would have seemed crazy at the time for people to then buy sort of flat water. What caused that to become the new trend?
What changed in the 90s, really, was Coke and Pepsi getting in on the game. They had taken a lot of criticism in the media for the obesity epidemic, and they also saw their market share falling. People were moving away from sugary sodas, and they saw that bottled water was becoming more popular, and it was, well, in the 90s it wasn't yet, but right now people drink more bottled water than they do milk or coffee or beer even. But when Coke and Pepsi got in on it, making their Aquafina and Dasani in the 90s, they just threw enormous amounts of advertising dollars into it, hundreds of millions of dollars. And they had these elaborate distribution networks all set up, getting their products out onto supermarket shelves and into delis and into vending machines. So that's what really changed it. We were just hit over the head with all this advertising telling us that their products, their flat water, not bubbly, and it was much more affordable than Perrier also, but that the products would make us feel better and look better and do yoga poses better. They all use yoga models in their advertising.
Well, and it makes sense that a plant that is already putting Coke or Pepsi in bottles can easily convert to this purified tap water.
Yes.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Elizabeth Reut is my guest. The book is called Bottle Mania. Let's speak to Frank in Cleburne. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how you doing today?
Great, thanks.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I don't want my comment to sound caustic, but I promise you, because of some of the misinformation on your show, lives are at stake here. Ralph Nader reported to Congress, 20-some years ago, how tap water was killing people. Because what they do, like I'm from Baltimore, which is known to be one of the 10 best water supplies in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got to take the chlorine. They got to kill the bacteria, so they got to put in chlorine. I promise you could check all this out. They put in five times as much chlorine as they do in a swimming pool, which causes the water to be bright yellow and smell very like bleach. And so who's going to drink that? So what they do is they add ammonia. Can you imagine drinking ammonia? You ever smelled ammonia? They put ammonia in because ammonia takes away the smell and the color. So now they have a chemical called chloramine, which forms free radicals with the molecules in the water, which attacks cell walls in the human body. And as a result, the Baltimore City water supply has 92 known cancer-causing agents in it.
Well, Frank, thank you so much for bringing that up. Elizabeth, have you heard of the combination? I have not, of ammonia and chlorine in the water. That seems that it would unleash a deadly gas.
Well, yeah, I have heard of it. Communities that have had trouble with disinfection byproducts because of the chlorine, some of them have switched to chloramines, which is a combination. It's less chlorine and it's and ammonia with it, and it's gentler, but I think it doesn't have quite the disinfecting power of the chlorine. And Washington, D.C. moved to it, but once a year or so, they have to revert to chlorine, and they do what's called a chlorine burn to scour out the pipes and things. And it is less studied than chlorine. It is a problem. It forms various byproducts that aren't completely understood. I'll put it that way. But no one has directly linked drinking water with chloramines in it that are at the that are at the MCL that meet the federal government's maximum contaminant level. No one has linked deaths with chloramine ingestion.
So it's basically a question, once again, of sort of deciding where your poison's going to be.
Right. Do you want to? You'll die faster from microbes in the water, microorganisms. That's one of the interesting things is that little bugs in the water will kill you fast, but having low levels of chemicals will take 40, 50, 70 years of drinking a lot of water, and so no one is ever going to link these chemicals with cancers or I guess some of them have been linked with birth defects. But if a utility is doing its job properly and reporting properly and being inspected, then those levels, no one should be drinking water that's yellow with chlorine that, burns them.
So how certain can we be if we purchase bottled water that it is free of all that?
That's a really good question. The FDA regulates bottled water. The EPA regulates tap water. But the FDA allows in bottled water all the same amount of contaminants, more or less, than the EPA. It's slightly less strict with regard to bacteria and cryptosporidiosis, which is a parasite in the water. But if the bottler is a member of the International Bottled Water Association, and 162 bottlers in the U.S. are, then they have even tighter guidelines for the water. But the big issue is that the plants aren't inspected that frequently. It's about once every 1 to 5 years, a bottled water plant sees an FDA inspector. And what the results of those tests are, you will have a very hard time finding out because the bottlers aren't required to make the results public, unlike a public utility or a city's water company. They have to tell you in a right-to-know report that they send out once a year to all their customers. And you can find out what they found in the water. And also, if they ever have an off test, they are required to let you know with a notice that there was an exceedance and you should boil water or whatever. And that's not going to happen with bottled water.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Elizabeth Reut. Her new book is called Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. Let's go next to Richardson and talk to Sue. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have a question. I've gotten an email recently. I don't know if it's one of the random emails that everybody sends, but there's supposed to be a relationship possibly between the plastic in the bottled water. If you leave the bottled water in your car, that it becomes carcinogenic. And I don't know if there's any truth to it or not, but it's the second time I've heard something about it, and I wanted to know if your guest had anything to say about that.
Thanks, Sue. I guess she's talking about chemicals leaching into the water.
Right. It was going around the internet for a long time, and it turns out there's not much validity to it. You have to get the container up to something like 900 degrees for there to be for that polyethylene terephthalate to be leaching in. But there is a chemical called antimony. It's a heavy metal that is part of plastic. That the longer the water stays in the plastic, researchers have found that it leaches out, but at minute levels, it's something like 1,000 times lower than the federal level. So I'm not really concerned about that. Freezing water bottles, also, that goes around the internet. No movement from freezing. Actually, colder things are less prone to be moving. But there is an issue with phthalates in number 2 bottles. And I just want to make clear that the number 1 bottles, the PET bottles that most people buy, the single-serve things, they don't have phthalates in them at all. And phthalates are a plasticizer, and they're linked with endocrine disruption. So you don't really want to be ingesting phthalates. But they occur in the number 2 bottles, which are the 1-gallon bottles, the sort of cloudy, milky-colored plastic. So they're in the 1-gallon bottles and the 2.5-gallon big, I call them cows, but they have a little spigot on them.
Yeah, you can put them on the shelf, on the counter,
yeah,
or in the fridge. Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are phthalates in those.
And you can tell the number of the plastic for people who are wondering what we're talking about. Where you see the little raised symbol for recycling is where you'll be able to know what number you have.
Right. It's usually surrounded by the 3 chasing arrows.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is the author of a book called Bottle Mania, Elizabeth Reut. Let's go next to Earl in Dallas. Hi, Earl.
Hi. How are you?
Great, thanks.
I'm not an expert on this, but I'm calling about the topic you just discussed, the leaching of chemicals into the water from plastics. I would really check into that if I were you. There are a lot of people that disagree with what you just said, and I know that I was freezing water in plastics and plastic bottle every day and like doing hot room yoga. And I got extremely ill at one point. I basically went to this holistic doctor, and he's a huge believer in or he claims the fact that the things that leach into the water from plastic look to your body like estrogen, and your body absorbs them, and it causes hormonal problems and hormonally related problems. I basically got off of that and did a cleanse and a few other things, and I mean, I just came back to 100% health. So I don't know. Again, I'm not an expert, but I think there's still controversy on that, and I wouldn't call that subject resolved.
Thanks for your call. I think, Elizabeth, you'd agree it's not resolved completely.
No, it isn't. And the information I got from the FDA about leaching of plastics, they were telling me that the tests that they had done showed that there was no leaching. And then I asked them where the data was from, and they told me that the data was provided by the bottle makers themselves. And as I say in my book, that didn't give me the utmost confidence. But to the caller, I would say, if drinking the water, if you feel sick, I would more suspect something microbial, because it's bacteria that gives you a tummy ache or that sends you rushing to the bathroom, and you feel that pretty quickly. If it were a chemical leaching from the plastic, it would be at very low levels, but yes, if you're doing it every day, it could be accumulating, and I don't know how endocrine disruptors make a person feel, but I don't think it's, you know, tummy trouble.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Matt in Fort Worth. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I had a question for Elizabeth. And first off, what with the plastics that go into making these, you know, bottles, they take, you know, just the environmental concerns from them. They take, you know, thousands of years if, you know, to decompose. And we use these plastic bottles just for seconds. Is there a push towards more environmentally friendly packaging for the water bottles, or no?
There is, by some of the bottlers. The bottlers have really been paying attention to this backlash over the last year, and they've been lightweighting their bottles, using less plastic in them, shrinking the label size, you know, just trying to have a smaller impact. But other people are talking about using bio-based plastics, and there were a couple companies that put their water into bottles made from corn. And I did a piece for Smithsonian Magazine on corn plastic and found that the people who make it tout its compostability, but it turns out these bottles are going to break down into carbon dioxide and water only in a commercial composting operation. So if you throw a corn bottle into your home composting bin, it's likely it's going to still be there in another year or so. So it doesn't seem like a great solution until we have more municipal composting programs and collection to pick this stuff up. The other problem is that they're made from corn, and corn is really expensive now. It's one of the most environmentally environmentally damaging crops to grow. It takes enormous amounts of water to make the corn, and it takes a lot of inputs, fertilizer and herbicides, things like that. So it's kind of ironic, growing corn to make environmentally friendly bottles for our water is actually hurting the water that we might be drinking, because all the stuff washes off into groundwater or into surface water, and then you get all those problems with too much bacterial growth or algae growth in our waterways. So I don't think corn bottles is the answer.
So you have the rise of bottled water in the industry in the 90s when Coke and Pepsi got involved. That was also about the time that the mantra about 8 glasses a day being critical to sustain human life in any form really took off. Are those two things related? Was that used a lot as part of marketing campaigns?
Oh, yes. The bottlers latched onto that, telling you, well, it started with models being photographed drinking Evian and other kinds of bottled water, and they said that it suppressed their appetite, and that they drank a lot of water because it made their skin look clear and their hair shiny. And the bottlers played on this, telling you, I think it was Coke that spent millions of dollars in an ad campaign that said basically, I think it literally said, drink more water, and that we needed to drink eight ounce glasses a day, which turns out not to have any medical basis. There was a report that came out in the 1940s from the National Research Council that said we needed to drink that much water, but it then went on to say in the very next sentence that most of that water can be consumed in food, and our food contains, there's a lot of water in fruits and vegetables, pasta and rice are like two-thirds water. Even meat, I just learned, is 40% water. So we don't literally need to drink all that water.
Meanwhile, people took the advice not only to mean it couldn't come from food, but that 8 glasses was on top of coffee or tea or milk,
right,
or anything else people drank.
Right, which also count. And so it became very important. Portability was crucial. If you were going to have to drink it all, you need to bring it with you. And that's when people just, you know, wanted to run into the corner store and get a bottle to go.
Yeah, and you also come into this question of hyper-individualism, this idea that we don't want to drink water from the communal jug, or we don't want to walk to a water fountain. We want something made just for us. Can you talk about that phenomenon?
Yeah, I use this word hyper-individuality, which I got from Bill McKibben in his book Deep Economy, and he talks about this movement away from the common good and communal effort and public life, retreating towards our houses, retreating to our own cars, not using public transportation. You see it with iPods. No one wants to listen to the bus driver's music. Everyone has private music. We have our own private cell phones. We don't use the public phone. And to me, bottled water fits right in with that. And our crazy fears about catching something from another member of the human race, from the water fountain, which I've talked to experts about contamination from fountains and handles, and they basically laugh it off. But I think people like to have their own private water in their hand, and they like to snap it open from at the top and know that no one else has touched it. And I think it's a sad sign of the times.
Well, it's funny. So few people use water fountains now that they're probably the cleanest things around.
Right. There was a great New Yorker cartoon. There was a phone booth on a city street, and on the top it said, "Speak in private, only 25 cents.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is journalist Elizabeth Reut. Her new book is called Bottle Mania: How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. If you'd like to send us an email after the break, you can send it to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, a way to keep your greatest two tools, imagination and curiosity, sharp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Elizabeth Reut. Her new book is called Bottle Mania: How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. She's also the author of the previous book, Garbage Land. If you want to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, and that is where we find George in Dallas. Hi, George.
Hi. I have a quick comment. In the 70s, when Perrier became really fashionable in restaurants, I used to be highly amused. Some people in the know would order the bottle chilled and a chilled glass, no ice. Other folks would just get a regular Perrier that wasn't chilled, a glass, and then the glass was filled with tap water, which seemed to defeat the purpose, as the tap water melted and diluted the pure Perrier. So I just found it amusing over the years.
Thanks.
That's
for your call.
Thanks.
Yeah, I guess it speaks to the idea of bottled water as status symbol.
Yeah. if you're buying something that's imported, so we think that's better. I want to make the distinction between different kinds of waters. When I went out with that water expert, I didn't bring any Aquafina or even Poland Spring water. I brought all waters that came from, I brought one American water from Tennessee, and the others were from other countries, not just Europe, and they all came in glass bottles, I think. And this guy, Michael Masham, makes a distinction between bottled water and bottled water. And he really looked down at what he called commodity waters, and that is the plastic bottled purified tap waters, and even the Poland Spring, which he admires that it's from Springs, but he doesn't like their marketing and that it's inexpensive and comes in a cheap-feeling plastic bottle. So I think there's a real difference between those affordable or more affordable waters and the high-end waters, which people don't walk down the street swigging from, and then they're not drinking 29 gallons a year of that. That's what we're up to now in this country. The figures for 2007 are 29 gallons per person. But it's not of those imported fine waters.
Well, and how much does the fact that this is now a product of the masses play into the backlash?
I think that's part of it, that when only a few people were drinking the water, it was okay and it had its snob appeal. But now that everyone is drinking different kinds of water, whether it's Fiji, which I wonder if he considers that I don't think it's a commodity water because it's up a notch.
It does have that cool square container.
Yeah, but. Right. But now that more people are doing it, it's not as everyone's on the bandwagon, so there's less cachet to it. But it really is the environmental movement that is focusing on this. And as I say in the book, some of the first people who latched onto bottled water, interested in wellness, and you know some aesthetics also, they were looking inward and they wanted to treat themselves well and take care of themselves. And so they were buying water that they thought was better for them, that was purer. They were told it was purer. But it's also the same people who are now looking outside and seeing what trouble the environment is in and caring about the world who are saying, hey, wait a minute, there is a footprint behind this water that might not be completely necessary. We might not need to be buying this. Let's move back to tap water and shrink our carbon footprint. So I think there's big overlap between those groups.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Roy in Fort Worth. Hi, Roy.
Hi. I just wanted to make some comments. I work for the water department out here in Fort Worth, and I hear people complaining all the time about the chemicals in the water, the chlorine and the chloramines and stuff like that. And I think it's just a bunch of hysteria. We don't put that many chemicals in the water nowadays. Two of our three water treatment plants actually use ozone to sanitize the water, and then the chloramines are only put in at the end to get it from the treatment plant to the house. And if you're worried about even those chemicals or whatever, buy an inline filter under your sink or buy a pitcher with a built-in filter, and that should take care of most of your concerns. I think people just kind of go too far in their fear about the chemicals in the water and things like that.
Do you ever hear, Roy, from people like Elizabeth who sort of love their hometown water?
Yeah, occasionally. occasionally, you know, we have people that say we have some good tasting water. In fact, our Eagle Mountain Treatment Plant, you know, on a regular basis wins a nationwide taste test.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much for your call. Wait,
can I ask Roy a question?
Sure.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, does it depend how far you live from where the chlorine or the chloramines go in, the strength that you might detect?
Yes, it does. The closer you live to the plant, the stronger the levels are going to be. The further out in the system you go and the size of the pipe and the amount of usage in the area also determines how much, because they break down over time.
Right.
And so we go through great lengths to make sure that the water at the far end of the system meets the minimum requirements for safety, just like we do the water right next to the treatment plant.
And do chloramines off-gas the way chlorine does? If you didn't have a filter and you let your water stand overnight, you can get the chlorine smell out of it. Does it work the same way for chloramines?
I do believe they work the same way. If you let them sit out for a while, they'll dissipate out of the water.
Okay.
That's what they tell you to do with water before you put it in a little fishbowl. Because the chlorine and, I guess, the chloramines are bad for the fishies.
Yeah.
Roy, thanks so much for your call. Yeah, it does work great to just sort of leave water uncovered in the fridge or something, and it'll taste fine.
Yeah. Now, can I make my plea right now for watershed protection? Because if we didn't allow so much stuff in the water in the first place, if we did a better job of keeping untreated sewage out of waterways, and if we prevented farm runoff manure and fertilizer and things like that, we wouldn't have to put so many disinfectants in the water. And I go through this whole thing in the middle of my book, writing about what's in the water and how it gets in there and how there is so little federal funding and not enough enforcement of the Clean Water Act and wetlands protections. We need to do a much better job. If we didn't let this stuff in the first place, we wouldn't have to spend so much energy and money taking it out at the water treatment plant.
Well, you went to one place where they took out all these dangerous chemicals, and then when they were done, they took the same chemical they just removed and dumped it back.
Well, one of them, it was atrazine. I went to Kansas City because I wanted to compare a place with New York, which starts with a pretty clean water supply and doesn't filter. So I thought, okay, I should go to a place that starts with pretty heavily used source water. And so I went to Kansas City, which drinks from the Missouri River, and there's a whole lot of farming that goes on upstream of there. And so there's a lot of atrazine, which is the most commonly used herbicide in this country, and it goes onto corn fields and soybean fields, and it makes its way into the waterways. And then Kansas City has a very sophisticated plant there. They go through all these filtering and scouring and things, and what they have to do during spring runoff time is put in this sort of activated carbon, and the atrazine gets attached to the carbon, and they spend a lot of money on it, and they get all the atrazine out, and then they filter the water and polish it some more. And then I asked the guy, okay, well, what do you do with the atrazine once you get it out? And he said, we dump it back in the river. And so then it goes on to the next town, and it's their problem.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Dennis in Fort Worth. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Great,
or
thank
today?
You. Fine.
I just wanted to ask a question that I haven't heard addressed. Why on the recycling of these bottles do they not impose a deposit on them? It seems to me that if there were a deposit, that would pretty much take care of it to a great degree. I would imagine that there's still going to be people that will throw them away along the roadside or whatever, but there are a lot of people out there that would be glad to pick that up if there was a deposit on it. And I know that in some of the third world countries that they have problems with recycling and that sort of stuff. I know I was in Egypt once and went on a cruise down the Nile, and there were just literally thousands of bottles, Evian, you name the brand, they were floating in the Nile, and literally rafts of them. I think it's a sin what we do with this stuff, and I'd like to find out about the deposit.
Well,
why isn't it going on?
Well, you're absolutely right about its effectiveness. There are 11 states with bottle deposit laws, bottle bills, and those states recycle those containers at a rate of 70 to 95%. Only two of the states include water bottles under those bills. And environmental groups have been trying to get water included for years. It keeps coming up over and over again, but it's always defeated by the bottling industry because they helped fund it, and they don't want to see more bottles added to it. They think that the water bottlers say, we believe in recycling. We want to put our efforts behind curbside recycling programs. They work pretty well. Well, it's obvious to me they're not working pretty well. There aren't enough places for people to bring their bottles. People walk around with water a lot more than soda these days when they're going to the gym or going out to the mountains or boating or whatever, and they're not hanging on to those bottles till they see a blue bin for recycling. And that's why the rate for recycling water bottles is so much lower than the rate for recycling soda bottles. So I agree with you that if we could get a national bottle bill that covers all these bottles and maybe other kinds of bottles too, although nothing really beats water bottles for sheer numbers, like sure, we maybe should return ketchup bottles, but we're not using 50 billion ketchup bottles a year. I think we would recover these bottles and then get them back into production, get them back in use, make new bottles out of old bottles instead of oil.
How is the availability of bottled water everywhere affecting the availability of free water, say tap water in restaurants and other places?
I think I read something during the drought in Atlanta. Were people not able to get tap water, but they could buy imported? I'm not really sure. Are you asking if people have stopped serving tap water?
I'm asking if restaurants are pushing bottled water because they can make money off of it.
Oh, no. Au contraire. many restaurants, higher-end restaurants that are concerned with their environmental image, have stricken tap water, bottled water from their menus.
Hmm.
So it's going that way. People are moving away from it. Mayors across the country are canceling their bottled water contracts. Saying they're not going to spend taxpayer dollars on individual servings of bottled water.
Is there a big environmental difference between individual servings of bottled water and the ones that come to a lot of offices that are delivered in a cooler?
Yeah, there is. The larger size serving you have of anything means there's less packaging per serving. And those those big 5-gallon jugs are reused, which is even better than recycling. They're reused about 30 to 40 times, and the bottled water industry will say that they are one of the original recyclers because they take those back and they sterilize them and they reuse them. So that is better than buying an 8-ounce bottle and throwing it away and then buying another one. But it's not as good as drinking the water that is coming through publicly owned pipes that's, you know, monitored and you can get information about it. And, you know, it's zero waste to take a glass of water and fill it at your sink.
I think we have time for one more call, and we will take it from Patty in Garland. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I had a question about distilled water. My mom is a health nut, and she swears by it. And I just wanted to know if you know the health benefits, if the distilled water is better over spring or tap water.
I think when you distill water, you lose the minerals, which could be good or bad, depending on whether you want them. It takes a long time to make distilled water, so it takes a lot of energy to keep that water boiling and collecting that steam. I think that in 4 hours you might get a gallon of water or something. And if you have heavy metals in it, it might concentrate. I'm not really sure. I don't want to speak to that, but...
really a common prescription for people who don't like the other kinds of water.
Right.
So where do you think the trend is going? We have seen a backlash, sort of, but we've seen over and over that Americans tend to favor convenience over other things.
Sadly, yes. I think that the backlash is gaining momentum. You see it on college campuses and with these mayors who were meeting in Miami over the weekend, the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I think they were voting today on whether to adopt this resolution to phase out these bottled water purchases. But I think people are still buying lots and lots of bottled water. The rate of growth has slowed over the last year, but that's kind of, people are still buying as much bottled water, and it's going up, but it's not going up as fast. And part of that might be because the market is so huge that it just cannot sustain this growth forever. It would be impossible to drink that much water. But I think also that the oil crisis is going to affect people, that people will decide they've got to fill their gas tank. They're not going to buy little bottles or any bottles of plastic water if they can help it.
And I know that you didn't have a bottled water habit to break yourself, but you're a Nalgene girl when you want to carry water with you?
Well, after I learned about the bisphenol A, it's an endocrine disruptor that can leach out of Nalgenes, I semi-retired my Nalgenes and I bought a metal bottle that I use for everyday use. And I'm not really afraid of my Nalgene. I still use it, and I just don't put anything hot in it. I don't put it in the dishwasher or use harsh detergents on it because it's been shown that will leach more bisphenol out. So I use it occasionally, and Nalgene now makes a bottle without bisphenol, as does Camelback. So I'm still toting my water around in various bottles.
Elizabeth Royd's new book is called Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.